We won't embarrass anybody.
We will otherwise find a way.
Perfect. Thank you, Susan.
And Steve, I came in looking for that honorary degree. I want to make sure.
It's over here.
Okay. You mean mine?
We're on the record.
What a time.
Thanks, Mark.
It looked like a breath of spring.
Fresh as a daisy.
Before we get started, in that we've got a couple of new faces and some faces that come in and out, let's, if we wouldn't mind, just go around the inside and outside of the room quickly and just give our position and what we do when we're not doing this. Cynthia, would you start?
I'm Cynthia Fox. I am the faculty representative in the Department of Languages, Slurs, and Cultures. I teach English.
I'm Jim Jackson, and I serve on a number of boards, one of which is the Alden Medical Center Board, as well as the council, and as I retired.
Good for you. Good afternoon. I'm Mark Egan. I'm the CEO of the Capital Region Chamber.
I'm Jim Steller. I'm still new provost.
Not much longer.
How long do you get to use that new thing?
That's up to the president. Don't tell me.
Pat Caldwell. Been on the council a little bit, I guess. I'm starting to feel like, actually, John, you're on longer than me, so somebody here is.
People have died.
I'm a graduate of the School of Business, and I live and work in New York.
That's it.
Well, I could go on, but I don't want to bore everyone.
I'm Jean-Pierre, and I work for the state, and I'm the director of classification and compensation.
Great. Good morning. I'm Joseph Garba. I'm the new president of the Albany Alumni Association, and I'm also the deputy borough president of the wonderful borough of Manhattan.
I'm Steve Bettis, university liaison to the council, two-time UAlbany grad, retired vice president for finance and business.
Great fashion.
Trendsetter.
I'm Nick Butler. I'm the undergrad rep, but I'm not doing this. I'm writing papers and reading textbooks.
Jim Clancy, 1990 graduate of Albany, and former state employee and now current consultant.
I can attest to that.
Conversation to be had there.
Yes.
Believe it or not, we've hired him to.
Yes, Pat is a client.
Oh!
Well,
how's that?
It's always good to have a client.
She's always good to have a client.
A
client in the great stand.
Absolutely.
You have to address that conflict of interest problem.
I'm John Fallon. I also have 2 degrees from Albany from many years ago. And I've been on the council for a while, yeah. And I'm a partner at the firm of Kay Scholer, which is a law firm in Manhattan.
Michael Castellano, the council president, and dual degree from UAlbany. I serve as a CEO of SUPCU, but really I'm doing all kinds of other things instead, so don't tell anybody I'm here.
Robert Jones, pleasure serving as president.
John Drews, I'm AVP for facilities, and you'll hear me later.
John Riley, general counsel's office.
I'm Mark Benson, and since it's under a year, I'm the new athletic director here, but I'm also a proud owner of a snowblower now.
I'm Vice President for Development.
James Giz, Vice President for Research.
Jim Van Boris, I think I've left behind a new title. I hope I did, anyway. And I'm also a grad of my master's degree from the campus, and I'm the Vice President for Finance and Administration.
J.D. Hunt, President's Office. All right. Is Robert, are you on the phone?
I didn't hear him chime in. He wasn't sure.
Right.
I'm trying to do it.
Let's start with a motion to approve the consent agenda items. Again, as a reminder, we've moved to a consent agenda. So these are items that we pass together. If there's something you would like to take off the consent agenda, please do so now. If not, we'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda. Second?
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposition? And that is we are on to the report of the president.
Well, let me start by saying It's been an amazing academic year that's coming to a close, and I'd like to just take this opportunity to thank each and every one of you for the role that you played, both as a part of this council and the other multiple ways that I know almost each and every one of you are engaged with advancing this university, and you've been engaged for quite some time. And I just can't say enough about how important your support to this campus has been, and to me personally as president. And so it's been a very, very busy and a very productive year, and we are anxiously awaiting graduations and other activities that actually started a few days ago. So about Sunday, probably around 1 or 2 o'clock or so, I'll go into hibernation for at least 12 hours and try to get caught up on some sleep. But we're very, very excited. This is a very exciting time of year. Let me just start, as I typically have done over the last couple of meetings, and kind of give you an update with some of the hiring decisions that we've made, some of the searches that we have underway. You know, I really hadn't thought a lot about this until we actually started to count the number of searches that we had going on concurrently or about to initiate. It was more than a half dozen searches we were running, and I won't advise anyone to try that again. We won't do that again anytime soon. Most of them are coming to some stage of completion. So just to kind of give you, to remind you, we were searching for a Dean of Criminal Justice and Social Welfare. The criminal justice position, Mr. Provost, if I remember, is still being negotiated.
We are at the 90% level, which means it's not done.
It's not a done deal yet. Yeah. But we're very, very pleased that a couple days ago we announced the new dean of the College of School of Social Welfare, Dr. Daniel Hewitt from
Loyola University of Chicago.
Chicago.
Very distinguished scholar in his field and a current dean.
And a current dean. So I want to emphasize that a bit, because I can tell you we've been gratified by the fact that for a couple of these searches we had people that are already sitting in deans or comparable roles who saw significant value, apparently, and the opportunity to make, essentially, in many ways, a parallel move to come to a university where, I'm sure, for most of these programs, we are highly ranked, higher ranked in some of these places, or they saw a more lucrative opportunity and not necessarily a financial one, but programmatic and academic one. So we're very pleased about that, and I think it speaks volumes about the quality of some of our programs. So the social welfare search is done, and I think we're getting close with the librarian search. The Vice Provost for International Education is all but a done deal. I don't know if he's signed off yet, but we have a candidate that we've identified there.
He told me he would sign. I don't have it in writing yet.
He told me the same thing, so at least we're the lawyers. We can at least sue him if he doesn't show up.
Right.
So we're pretty much clear that Vice Provost for International Education search will be wrapped up pretty soon. And again, very excited about the potential hire that we've identified here as well. I think this person is going to be a game changer and really be very, very valuable in assisting us in advancing our international agenda. So that search should be wrapping up in the next few weeks. We have made some progress with hiring a chair of the computer engineering program that we hope will find its way through state ed. It's gone through all the levels of approval that were necessary, and now sits in state ed, and we certainly hope that it gets approved in a timely fashion, because we've hired Dr. Kim Boyer-Hoy from RPI. I had a meeting with Dr. Jackson yesterday, and first she had to slap my hand for stealing one of her scholars.
Sorry about that, Mr. President.
No, it's all right. You know, anytime you can hire someone like that, she can beat me up once a day, I'll take it. But we're very excited about Dr. Boyer. He is a very, very talented individual, person that's going to bring a lot of stature to this new computer engineering program, and he will also be serving as the interim dean of the College of Computing Information. As we transition that hopefully pretty soon in the next several months to the new College of Engineering and Applied Sciences. So again, a good example of, you can attract someone like this from RPI who wants to be involved in finding in the establishment and advancement of this new college, and particularly his first program, I think speaks volumes about the perspective that people have about the institution. So we're very, very excited about that.
Robert, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
I just don't remember our prior discussions. But the incoming freshman class, were they able to enroll in engineering, or did they not even know that? Because we don't have the final blessing to be able to do that.
We had originally thought that we would have been able to admit some transfer students in the fall. Jim, you can correct me if this has changed. But we weren't allowed to do that, and so we can't until the state ed has given us approval. And that's why we hope this not doesn't take a year the way it did for our most approval of our informatics degree program, because it makes it very difficult to recruit if you spend a whole year in state ed before your program is in. The next academic year starts 3 or 4 months later. You've missed an opportunity for, you know, for your first graduating class. It's delayed for a year. So we're going to be pushing to get that approved in a timely fashion, definitely, hopefully, sometime early fall, so that we can start to recruit for next academic year. And we're absolutely certain that, I mean, we're already getting calls from around the world, people wanting to know, can I enroll, and of course, they're not allowed to. So we're very excited about this. Solving another enrollment challenge that I have talked to you about in the past, and we won't spend a lot of time talking about that today other than maybe asking Jim to just give you kind of a brief overview of some of the strategies that we're putting in place to try to address that issue. We have searches underway. Actually, we will start the interview next week for the Vice President for Communication and Marketing. This is a search that's critically important as we think differently about how we need to tell our story more, in a much more compelling way, tell it in a much broader fashion than we have in the past. Someone that's going to help me figure out where I need to be in the world, in this state, to talk about the new university at Albany, and to try to get us back to the point where, as I said several times, that we're at the top of the mind of every family and every child who's graduating from a high school in the state of New York. And so this is the point of departure for that process. So we're very excited about that. I've seen the pool of candidates, the 4 finalists for that, and it's a strong pool. And so we're very excited about that as well. The VP for and CI, the Chief Information Officer position has been delayed getting off the ground for a number of reasons, but we are waiting approval to waiting for responses back from the bids for the search firm to handle that process. So we've got to kick that off as quickly as we can. It may not get up and running until after the academic year because there's not much we can do over the summer. And so I've got to decide what we're going to do about an interim company here. I originally thought it was going to just be a 30-day down period and we probably wouldn't name an interim, but Chris is retiring at the end of June, and so it's critically important, particularly in light of all the things that we have going on that engages and involves this office. We have to have someone in that role, and so we're going to be reporting to you on that later. We've initiated the compact planning process under Jim Van Voorhis's leadership. This is the planning process that will be looped back to our budget allocation process that I've been talking to you about. Jim has done an outstanding job, along with other members of the leadership team, framing that process in a way that apparently has, I don't know, people are confused that there's a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, or they are so excited about this opportunity, but we had over 230-something proposals that were submitted via the electronic process that Jim and our folks developed in our institutional research office, and we understand that probably by the 10th time it's done, it may be close to 240 plus. Right. And so we're very, very excited about that because this is the way that we're trying to transform the university so that the best and most compelling ideas will find some way, hopefully, to the top of the pile, and we'll start to invest in what works and what has the greatest opportunity to move this university forward. And I think it's probably fair to say that this is one of the first times least that I'm aware of, where we've had this integrated compact and planning and budget allocation process. And again, it's not only a process where we will be allocating resources to the best, most compelling ideas, but if we find ourselves in a budgetary shortfall situation, it will be the mechanism by which we will strategically decide where we need to cut back and tighten the belt a bit. So it's going to be a dual purpose process, and I'm very gratified that people are taking it seriously. And one, I want to just emphasize this too. I said this to the faculty as I addressed them a few days ago. What's also gratifying about this is it's creating something that's absolutely a critical component of what I call the cultural change that's needed at this university. People are stepping out of silos. So we're not just getting individual proposals from Department X or from College Y. We're getting these integrated proposals where people have said, you know, why don't we work together on that? And so I think that's one of the things to me that's very, very exciting, because we're going to have to find new and effective ways to get people to stop, get out of silos, and start to work more in a much more collaborative fashion. And this process is one of the ways by which that is certain to start to happen in a much higher level at this university than I believe that what has occurred in the past. So we're very excited about that. There's one search that we decided to avoid, and that's the Vice President for Student Success. As I told you at our last meeting, we named Mike Christakis as an interim. And I can tell you, in all my 30-some-odd years of higher education experience and 25, 27 years of administrative experience, I've never seen anyone who really hit the ground running, stepped out of his silo, started to develop what I know is absolutely required for our students to be successful at this university, started to work very seamlessly with Jim Stell, our new provost. These two guys have worked and done innovative things like once or twice a month sitting down with students, 40, 50, however many show up at a time, and just having coffee and ask the general question, well, you know, what's your experience at this university? Can you tell us what we're doing right, what we need to do differently? And I can tell you that kind of sense of collaboration between these two offices is absolutely required to get us to the point where we need to do a better job at enhancing the undergraduate experience in particular, and I'm going to talk a little bit more about that. And so, some of you know, we decided not to do a search. You know, it's pointless to do a search if you know what the hiring decision is going to be. And I couldn't imagine finding anyone that was better qualified. We would have hit the ground running and already started to do some things that I think most of my leadership team would agree were critically important. And so we decided to move ahead. So, and I think I look forward to you having the chance to get to know him a bit better. Let me just end, you all know the issues about declining enrollment. We talked about that, but we're not just sitting around brooding over it or complaining about it. We started strategies to really address the issue. And part of what we've done is decided we need to focus on the undergraduate experience. And so I've asked Provost Stellar to really help us start to think effectively across a pretty wide continuum of possible activities of what we need to do to enhance the undergraduate experience. And I know we've been talking a lot about the big research and scholarship ideas, the new colleges, but it came very clear to me as I spent the last year talking to all 39 departments, including the two, and plus the two schools that are not structured along department lines. I started floating this idea, in addition to the big scholarly things we're talking about, would there be substantial benefit and possibilities in terms of growing future enrollments as we grow these new academic programs? I fundamentally believe that one of the best recruiters for this university are the students that we graduate. And they have a great or an outstanding experience here, then they will go out and tell two friends and so on and so forth. And before you know it, we'll have 35,000 to 40,000 applications every year, and will allow us to be more selective, which will allow us to rise in the rankings among other research universities similarly situated. And so we've asked Jim to start this process on enhancing the undergraduate experience. So Jim, could you just take just a couple minutes to kind of frame for these folks what we have in mind and why we think it's critically important?
I think the major agenda the president's laid out is to diversify the academic portfolio, but what he's asked me to speak about is how we can hold on to more students that we currently have here. That's sort of a bottom line thing. The more important goal is to, as the president said, to enhance the undergraduate experience. So Mike and I co-chair a working group composed of a group from his office, my office, and from faculty, and a couple of students. And we meet weekly, we have subcommittees and so on, and we're focused on what are we actually doing on the ground, particularly with the freshmen that are coming next year. It's a way just to bite off a more manageable piece of the puzzle. We currently have an 80.2% freshman sophomore conversion rate. We think we can push that in 2 years to 90%, which will make us a slight leader of the campus centers. Buffalo, I believe, is at 88%. So this means it's doable. And that'll also affect our revenue stream in a positive way. And so I can tell you some of the things we're doing. We completely restructured summer orientation. Turns out the students told us in those meetings that they remember their orientation leader and the students that they lived with for that evening, that they were here one night, and they remember nothing of what you old people told us. That's pretty much what they told us. And so we changed it to make it small group and interactive, have them talk to each other, which means that our people will have to repeat themselves several times during the day. But we also will get their attention because they can do what we're doing, as opposed to sitting in a lecture hall and just get the information. We also invested heavily in the writing and critical inquiry faculty who teach these courses. We are very serious about these courses. We don't let you out of them. You advance place. So we reduced the class size from 25 to actually 19. The idea was to go to 20, but if you go one more, U.S. News gives you some credit, so why not go to 19? And then we have a series of software moves that we've made to produce a team of folks that will be the retention team for these students, including these instructors. And we have another software package that we're looking at, the RFP is out, that does big data analytics on the students' risk factors and tells you their names. So the idea is that Johnny comes up as a risk factor and his writing and critical inquiry instructor says, Johnny, you look a little down. Are you okay? And Johnny says, I'm homesick. And the person stops because they have the time now and says, let's talk about that. Now their job is to teach writing. That'll get better. But we want them to do these sort of advising things. Why don't you go see the advisor? Let me take you over to meet this department because you think you might not want to be the major that you came here. That's not a big deal. I changed my major 3 times. So that kind of interaction is all around making contact with the students, eyeball-to-eyeball contact. Professors, the students, peers, the students, everything we can do to get them to see themselves here at the university to grow and develop. And then we were working on a plan for what to do after we hold on to them as freshmen. That involves rubbing them up against their career possibilities through what's commonly called today experiential education. It's the top article in the Journal of Higher Education today. And it allows you to see the career possibilities you have. So this will give students an inspiration to stay here because they can see what they might become afterwards. What are we talking about? Internships, entrepreneurship, research with faculty, study abroad, all these kinds of classic things that we can do after we hold on to them in the first 6, 8, 10 weeks of their freshman year. Then we can. So I'm extremely interested in this. Mike and I do a lot of focus groups with staff and with faculty, and I would say if any of you have ideas, just send me an email, because I get ideas from everywhere about little things that we can change. The most powerful source of it has been these focus groups. We have about 30, 40 of them, and just the two of us, and a note taker. And they, after about 15 minutes, they start to really talk to us honestly. And the information comes from everywhere. It comes from student life, residence halls, dining, athletics. By the way, EOP, 92% freshman to sophomore conversion rate, 12 percentage points over us. The Middle Earth, which is a program started in 1970 to have students take care of other students, like a suicide hotline is how it began, 98% freshman conversion. We don't know athletics yet. We suspect athletics is way over the average, and that's going to be an American East initiative that we'll take on broadly. So we have some information. We're going to try to use it and pump up retention, and we think this will also help recruitment.
Do we have living learning centers? It makes a big campus pretty small.
It does. We have 15 of them. Next year we'll have 19.
Oh, okay.
I didn't mention that because we got a lot of stuff going on, but
okay.
I'll be happy to expand. Yes, we do. It's very powerful. In fact, one of the interesting statistics from that group is that not only do they retain at a higher rate, but if you measure their interaction with other students outside the Living Learning Center, it's much higher than the average students. Mike Christakis says the one thing he hates about campus is Netflix. Because students get on Netflix on their laptop and they don't go outside and they don't interact with us. He said, if I could ban Netflix, I think that might make a difference. And I think that's just illustrative of the kinds of things we're thinking about. We're not actually thinking of banning Netflix.
But you could have a go dark day.
Yes, we could.
I love those myself. Right.
Well, I think the important things, I wanted Jim to talk about this because you're going to be hearing more about this Enhancing the Undergraduate Experience Initiative, because from our perspective, it's as important as anything that we talk about in terms of the innovation side of expanding the academic program. You know, we've got to really change the dynamics around the things that really drive enrollment, and that is the quality of the education experience we provide outside of the classroom. Not that concerned about what happens in the classroom. We're doing some work there too, but yeah. So you're going to be hearing more about this, and so stay tuned. Let me just wrap up.
Sure. Question. Yeah. Do we do anything with the 20% fallout, either to survey them or re-recruit them?
We have not. We will. They're great candidates for exit interviews. First of all, we have to find them, and that can be a little bit hard. But we will do that, and then I think the re-recruiting part is a great idea, and we are going to do something there. We'll also change our recruiting to focus on the hot high schools that we've got. But certainly to re-recruit is a great idea. Obviously, the best thing is to hold on to them, but we can't do that.
What's the biggest reason, just not interested in the school anymore, decided to go somewhere else, didn't want to be in college anymore?
There's a lot of reasons, okay, and surveys show that students say the top reason is often financial, but that's not true. It's a simple answer to give a surveyor. I can't afford it here. What they mean is there's a cost-benefit trade-off. Some of the ones that are okay is I want to be at a small school. I want to do nursing, and you have many things, but not nursing. Goes to the president's initiative to start engineering. Broaden our portfolio. But when you probe a little deeper, it's usually isolation. They did not connect with someone. They didn't join the student government. They didn't do undergraduate research. They didn't do one of the things that provides that contact. So we think that that's really the cause that's underlying everything, and therefore we have to fight that. We have to fight the disconnection that happens with some people. Remember, we're holding on to 80% of the students. We're not doing a bad job here. We just want to pump that up 10%. And we think as we do that, it'll improve some other things that the president talked about, enhancing the undergraduate experience in general.
Are most of the people that leave kids that were in the dorms or commuters?
Most of them, I believe, are kids who live in the dorms because that's our biggest population.
We're talking about freshmen.
Percent-wise, I can't tell you.
But you have commuter freshmen.
We do. We have some from the local area. I don't know the percentage, but overwhelmingly the target is the students who are in the dorms. So that's why we're in the dorms. Half of these sessions are in the dorms. Half of them are in the campus center. So we actually go to their dorms, meet them there in the evening.
What about the overcrowding? I think that had a lot to do with it.
We haven't heard that at all. We've heard some complaints about the physical facilities that are minor. But what we've heard is success stories, like one residence hall, the RA got the kids to keep their doors open, and they created the community, and they all love that. So training the RAs is part of this. So one of the ideas we have is to take the freshman RAs, that is the first-time RAs, and have them work with the students who have been RAs before. Also, just more carefully screen the RAs, make sure they're really enthusiastic. So we could go on like this forever, and I'd love to do this. If you want to talk to me on email, I'm into this.
Well, as you can tell, Jim is a little bit enthusiastic about this. And as I said, it's a critical component of what we're trying to do to advance UOB. Let me just summarize briefly the other big part of this strategy, and that's the expanding the academic scope. We've already talked about computer engineering and ultimately standing up this College of Engineering and Applied Sciences. I think I mentioned to you part of our big plan now is to see if we can initiate that college on the Skylar building on the downtown campus, which is going to provide an opportunity for us to do some very innovative things in STEM education by engaging people in that community. We plan to also try to stand up something that's being propagated across the region and the country now called Makerspace, so people from the community can come in and have the opportunity to pursue an idea and to do innovation in that space. And we also anticipate it might be some space for incubator space for small companies, et cetera. So we're really thinking out of the box in terms of how we go about implementing this new College of Engineering and Applied Sciences. The affiliation with Albany Law is moving ahead as planned. We had a very, very outstanding first meeting of the joint committee that we created. We decided it was time for us to stop meetings occasionally together and to structure all of our meetings together with a small group of folks from Albany Law. And we did sign a memorandum of intent, and that is to spend the next, that basically outlines the things that we need to do over the next several months that will lead to the first of a series of memorandums that we will sign with Albany Law that's going to lead to a deep affiliation. And then we'll decide where we will go from there after a year or two of operating under a affiliation kind of arrangement. So we're very, very excited about that, very excited about the possibility. And just one little bit of trivia. I think Fardeed and his folks and some others start to ask the question, well, how many alums do we share in common with Albany Law? First number we heard Fardeed was a couple of hundred, right? Something like that. 204?
Four, that's what we had, yeah.
Yeah, that's what they had. But, you know, it's difficult for our grads that graduate from here for us to know where they enrolled afterwards. Well, if you check Albany Law's database, it's over 1,000.
Yeah,
right?
It's over 1,000.
It's over 1,000
folks. Table.
Yeah. And so we're using that to think about creative ways to get alums involved as we think about the whole campaign. So we're not only just working on the operation.
Am I going to get a new diploma?
What?
You're going to get a new fundraising letter.
Yeah, yeah, that's why you're coming.
And if you do that well, we'll give you a new diploma. That's where it works.
Yes, I should have said.
No, yeah. But we're very excited about this, folks. It's on a different, you know, this thing is kind of started out one way, then got a little bit too far ahead of us. We had to dial it back a bit, but we're still very excited. Albany Law is still very excited because the compelling reasons to do this are still there. And as more and more, I believe that people are beginning to understand that a capital city, a capital region without a law school just is going to not be good, not only for Albany Law, but for the region. And as we talk to other people around the country, that's the one thing that they notice, or they point out, is that Albany Law is not only just important as a place for legal education, because it's located here in the capital region. If you're going to have a law school anywhere in your state, you want one in the state capital. And so for that and many other compelling reasons, we'll move that along. The College of Emergency Preparedness, Homeland Security, Cybersecurity is moving along as well. Pleased to announce that we now have official word from the governor's office. He has given us the go-ahead to start to implement the plan that we put forth to modify our 2020 strategy to combine the E-Tech building with this new emergency preparedness, homeland, and cybersecurity building. So after more than several decades of trying to get a small parcel of land on the Harriman campus, it seems like we will at least be getting 12 acres to start this project. So we're very, very excited about that as well. Let me just wrap up by just a couple of other things here. As I said to you before, the other thing that we're working on is that we've decided we need to have a greater focus on health, on the health and biomedical sciences. We have a lot of expertise at this university, but it's scattered across three campuses, and it just doesn't hang together to provide the synergy that we think is necessary there. We're going to tie that initiative to a need to rethink the East Campus as a health and biomedical research entity of Research Park. And so you're going to be hearing a lot more about that. We're still trying to figure out how we are going to advance that notion. But it is one of the places where we have some core strengths that need to be leveraged in a different way. And I think all of us would agree we have some great assets on the East Campus, like our Cancer Research Center and our School of Public Health. But it really is not structured around a very cohesive, aggressive plan that's going to help advance the academic profile of this university, provide additional opportunities to advance education, research, and scholarship. So you're going to be hearing a bit more about that in the months ahead. So stay tuned for that. Last thing I'll just say is that we're moving forward with the Center for Advanced Data Analytics by leveraging our new data center. And so we'll be providing more detail about what that involves as well. And I don't know if you want to comment on this, Mr. Terran, who wears multiple hats, but we're also working as a part of this new Capital Region Economic Development Council / Upstate Revitalization Initiative to position all of the players in the Capital Region to rally behind a process that's going to lead to a very aggressive, rational economic development plan for this region that we sorely need. And as Michael puts it, and I think he's spot on, that is in many ways the big prize. But by the way, we're also in to win the whole thing. We also like to win $500 million in the process. But the big issue is that there's, and you know, it's kind of fortuitous that this competition is in place, because I just don't think this region and many other regions would have the wherewithal to pull together the resources, both human and financial, to think about putting together an aggressive plan if we're not for this opportunity to potentially win this $500 million. And so, Mike can't say much about it. He's the co-chair. He's agreed to be one of the co-chairs, along with Mike Hickey, the new incoming interim CEO of CEG. And we are very, very clear that whatever economic strategy for this region that comes out of this, we will be advocating very hard that higher education needs to play a central role in that, particular higher education as it relates to its ability to do research and innovation, that it needs to be a part of that core strategy. And so I'll just leave it with that, Mr. Chair. I know this took much longer, as always, but we're very excited about all of these things. And again, I thank you for your support, believe it or not, over almost the last 2.5 years. And I wake up each and every day excited about the future, the potential, and the promise of this great university. So thank you.
Well, I think you, especially with respect to the last thing, you are uniquely positioning the university to be that centerpiece of the Capital Region. And as we're working through this URI, there is no question that it is going to be focused on higher education. You know, when we look at core strengths of the region, that is one of them. So I think your ambition in stepping up to be the co-chair of the regional council, and me not knowing how to say the word no, but I think between those two, I think that puts us in the right position. And I'm excited about it. I'm excited about the plan. For those of you that don't know, we decided that we were not going to just cobble together a plan with the resources that we had here, but we said if we are going to do this, we are going to go as far as we can go. So we went and said we want to hire a world-class consulting firm to support us in this process, so that's what we did. We hired McKinsey & Company to support us, which is a whole other conversation, but I'm very happy with what they've done to date, and I think they are going to certainly be able to add to what we are going to be able to do. They are going to bring their resources, not just the New York resources, but the resources around the country and arguably around the world, to help us to create that plan that can move this region. If we should get the $500 million, that's fantastic, and it will move the region faster. But if we don't, we will absolutely have the plan that this region needs. For those of you that live in the region, we are
kind of Keystone Cop-ish, like with everybody being well-intentioned but often bumping into one another. This is going to help us to move that agenda forward. So I think Robert's stepping forward with all of the other things that he talked about and saying, and oh, by the way, in my spare time, I'm leading economic development in the region. I think it's fantastic. Any questions, President?
As far as the affiliation with Albany Law School, do you have a time frame for when something might happen?
Well, as I indicated to Michael in our agenda setting meeting, we anticipate that we will be ready for the first MOU to be executed properly sometime late August, early September. And that's going to be the initial MOU that's going to get some of the academic pieces in place. And then over the course of the next 12 months, there will be other things that we will put into place that also will probably require additional MOUs. Because we're approaching this not only, we're going to start with the academic pieces, because at the end of the day, that's the core. But there's opportunities around the philanthropic integration across the two institutions, some operational issues, other kind of back office functions potentially. And so we have structured this where there are three working groups that are co-chaired by one representative from UAlbany, one representative from Albany Law, and one of those working groups has to deal with the whole issue of what is the affiliation model that it would be most effective. The second one has to do with the academic framework around this. How do we create a situation where if we're deeply affiliated, if access for our respective faculty is pretty seamless, that they are able to act and function as UAlbany faculty and vice versa. And the same thing for the students. We're trying to figure out if the Michigan State affiliation model is the one that we want to emulate or we want to create some kind of hybrid version. And then the last piece is the piece that's going to be absolutely critical, is how do you treat this as a campaign? How do you get people excited about this, all the way from our alums to members of the legislature to mayors, the governor's office, the whole nine yards. And so we are working on a strategy that's going to start to, particularly once we get this new vice president on board, to start to think and very strategically about how we start to communicate what we're doing incrementally and get the entire Capital Region get buy-in to this. It's not just something that UAlbany and Albany Law is doing in isolation. This is about the entire region, and it's about what's good for UAlbany and what's good for this region. And so that's part of the strategy. So that will be a number, at least, I anticipate at least a couple, maybe three MOUs that may be executed over the next 12 months. And then what we plan to do is to get a good enough sense of how this affiliation is operating over a two-year period, and then we'll decide if, in fact, if things are working fine, and if the current model is working, we'll continue to do that, and if we need to push this to the next level, then we'll consider pulling the button and pulling the cord on that and initiating a different kind of more of an integrated structure is what we have in mind. What we want to see, be able to, you know, in this environment, you saying that it's a good idea is insufficient. You've got to be able to demonstrate the core benefit from what we're trying to do, and that's what we're trying to establish by doing the deep affiliation before we spend a lot of time thinking about a more integrated relationship with them.
Other questions?
Yes.
Yeah, I wonder where we are with at that one time talk about possible affiliation with Downstate Medical. Are we still considering that, or is that a possibility or not?
It is. The partnership, was what we're calling it now, with Downstate is moving at snail's pace, but it is still moving. As you know, Sue Phillips has been down there, spending a good portion of her time down there trying to better understand the challenges and the opportunity, and really getting to know the big issues that Downstate has to deal with as it struggles with kind of redefining its mission, resolves some financial challenges, etc. So it's not moving as fast as the Albany Law discussion. We didn't expect it to move. But as we think about this whole notion of the health sciences and the biomedical sciences, we anticipate getting a little bit more activity out of that
discussion than what we have received over the last 12 months. It's just kind of been a learning year for us and trying to filling each other out. But I think there are some, we've actually hired a consultant who's been doing some mapping for the academic and the scholarly research opportunities. Their report should be done in, when, Jim?
A couple of weeks, hopefully.
That's going to reveal a lot for us in terms of where the real opportunities, because President Williams and I decided that the way that we want to start with this partnership was to do the research alignment. And so to better help us understand what the potentials are, we hired a firm called the Consulting Group to come in and help us better understand some of those opportunities. So it's moving slower, but we still remain very excited. And I'll be candid with you, we're also looking at other affiliations, because I can tell you a lot of faculty ask me, why are you going all the way to, no offense to Brooklyn, but you got a medical school right across right across town there, and we are having conversations about greater alignment with Albany Med as well, because it's a valuable asset, and there are certain things that we can do with them to potentially be more difficult to do with Downstate. We'll try to partner with anybody that makes sense. That can help advance this university. Too. Well, that's why I said anybody, that makes sense. So we're starting some conversation there as well with Albany Farms.
I'm gonna move this along. Mark, would you take the podium?
Absolutely. Well, thanks for having me today. Appreciate all you do for UAlbany. And since this is my first chance to address this group, I thought I might just talk briefly about why I'm so excited to be a part of this team and kind of give you updates on what's been happening since I've been here, maybe throughout my talk. So I would go back to when I first was contacted. I honestly didn't know a whole lot about UAlbany, so I did a lot of research. And, you know, two things really jumped off the page right when I started was, the great academic reputation that we have as an institution, but also within athletics. It's really important to know that that foundation is in place. And so in research, I saw that we had no APR issues, which is what the NCAA uses to measure our academic progress rate. And it's put real penalties in place, punitive penalties, that make sure that athletic departments maintain a day-to-day focus on academics, which is one of our core missions. So when I got here, I learned a little bit more about how good we are academically. We had 12 of our 19 teams that have had a cumulative GPA of 3.0 or higher. So that's a really great statistic for our program. And of the top 12 teams, now 10 of the top 12 are our women's team. So the women are carrying the banner just a little bit ahead of the guys. So the guys, we're all competitive in athletics. It's a good, healthy competition there. Overall, in terms of cumulative GPAs, going back to the freshmen on the team, men's basketball would be number one at 3.4. But last semester, women's soccer was our number one academic team. So I felt really good about the academic reputation, and that represents about 450 or 60, depending on the time of year, student athletes. And one of the stakes that Dr. Jones has for the institution, I think we can help, is in helping get more international and out-of-state students. And a breakdown of who we are, we have 282 student athletes that are from the state of New York. We're always going to go where we can recruit the best possible student athletes, and if they're in the state, that's great, but if we're going to go outside, we will. We have 46 international students, so we're pretty well represented across the world, and if you look at some of our teams, really some of the driving factors are international student athletes, if you look at our men's basketball team, for example. So I knew the academic piece was something that you had to come in, nothing really needed to be done to maintain and try to improve, and then, competitively, we're really good in almost every sport. And so I thought it was very exciting to have an opportunity to be part of that success. And so we've had 83 now conference championships that we've won. So we have a very successful broad-based program. This semester alone, we've had 9 conference championships. And then we have a 10th team, our women's lacrosse team, that got an at-large bid for the NCAA and women's lacrosse. And that's significant because as a league in the American East, we rank a little on the lower end in terms of RPI and strength. So what that means is that we're building our strength, we're building a reputation. Living in a one-bid league, and I've done it in previous institutions, very tough tough thing to do, because you can win all year long and go into a tournament and have a hiccup, have an injury, have something happen out of your control, and it doesn't mean that you didn't have a great season. It just means you're not going on to the NCAAs. So we've had 10 teams that have that opportunity this year. We have had three national players of the year. We have two on our campus right now. We have Lyle Thompson in men's lacrosse, who has just been rated as the number one player in the world. Unbelievable. He's also, he and his brother Miles last year were the Towerton Award winners. He's been nominated again. That will be May 28th, so hopefully he'll be a repeat national player of the year. And then we have a sophomore in our field hockey team, Paula Hooser, who is the Honda player of the year. She's going to be honored in Los Angeles in the end of June as the national player there. We will honor her at a football game, as we will Lyle and the others in the fall. So we have great things happening in our sports programs. And I just recently went to an alumni event in New York City, and we had a long drive, and we took Will Brown, our men's coach, Coach Abe, our women's coach. We had Peter Hooley with us. We had Sam Rowley with Sarah Royals. I think it's really important that we showcase our student athletes and our coaches. So Sarah and I were in the car, and we had some time together, so we wanted to come up with some good statistics we could share at this meeting, points of pride. So just bear with me here. If you look at men's and women's basketball in the NCAA tournament, there were only 19 schools who had both their men and their women in the NCAA tournament. We were one of those. So our women had won four straight America East titles. The men had won three straight America East titles. So that's pretty elite company. So we start, let's see if we can, you know, narrow the circle a little bit. And if you take men's and women's basketball and you add men's and women's lacrosse, there were six teams in the country that had their school in that circle. It's Duke, North Carolina, Chapel Hill, Notre Dame, Ohio State, Maryland, and UAlbany. That's pretty good company. So let's see if we can separate ourselves just a little bit more. Let's push this envelope a little bit. And let's take men's and women's basketball, men's and women's lacrosse, and let's add field hockey, where we went to the Final Four. And by the way, we are the first school in UAlbany history, the first school in America East history, and SUNY to make a Division I Final Four in any sport. That was in field hockey this year. So that's a really big accomplishment. So let's add field hockey to the mix. Well, now it drops to four. You've got Maryland, Duke, UNC Chapel Hill, and UAlbany. Pretty good company, but we can do better, I hope. So we said, all right, let's see. You know, it was a three-hour drive. We were each on our phone. It was an equal division of labor, I might add. 50-50 partnerships, if we're talking about partnerships. Let's add men's and women's basketball. Well, let's count men's and women's basketball, men's and women's lacrosse, field hockey, and then our women's golf team qualified, won our conference championship. There are three schools in the country that were still in this pool: Duke, UNC Chapelville, and UAlbany. So, you know, you want to be number one. So I added my own algorithm to this. Special categories. We got to love them.
You also have dogs as their mascot.
I said, UNC Chapel Hill, and I'm not saying this because I'm an NC State alum, but it's just a fact. They have an unfair advantage because their student athletes don't have to go to many classes. There's no media listening to this, right? Fine institution, but we have to distinguish ourselves. And then Duke, in the NCAA, in the women's basketball, quite honestly, they needed the referees' help to beat us, so let's eliminate them.
That's right.
So that's a long way of saying we're really good and have a great broad-based sports program. So what those two things told me, there's a great support from the president and the university administration for athletics, and that we do it the right way, both in the classroom and in competition. So I was excited about that. And then, you know, one of the states where I felt we could help, besides international and out of state, a well-run athletic program is the front porch of a university. So we can hopefully help increase admissions, and we can help in retention. And you asked about living learning communities. One of the initiatives that we're going to partner with is we've had this event where they come to a basketball game as a group, because one of the reasons students don't come to athletic events or other events is they don't have anyone to go with, right? And retention is about feeling like you're part of something. So we suggest, well, rather than wait to the men's basketball season, let's just take the first football game and let's bring everybody together and let's have their own tailgate party and let's make it a really big deal so we can engage them that first weekend and then work to engage them throughout. Football will lead to soccer, will lead to basketball, will lead to lacrosse. And so that's one small example of the partnerships I think that we're looking at on campus. You know, the other way is if you look at our men's basketball season and the dramatic way it ended with Peter Hooley hitting that shot at the buzzer, really captured the nation's attention. And, you know, you hate that part of the reason that was such a compelling story is because of the backdrop with his mother dying of cancer and he had to go back home. But the aftermath of that and him being back, part of the team hitting the shot, it really touched people's lives all over the world. He got messages literally from all over the world that, hey, I'm in a similar situation. You've kind of helped me persevere and get through this. And as a byproduct of that, he was on ESPN SportsCenter, national TV, two different times. I think it was a Monday and a Tuesday, for a total of about 11 minutes, live TV. And in the background, as big as it can be, is a screen with the UAlbany logo in the background. We could never institutionally afford to get that kind of exposure. And in this case, it was for all the right reasons. So that's where I think the power of athletics and investment. And I've heard some people, you know, say that you know, why we went from Division III to Division II to Division I. Well, that's why you do it. You're helping your university, and you're helping, I think, as an alum, the value of your degree. It gives you a point of pride around the water cooler within the region and a point of pride. So I thought that was very important. And so how are we doing? I think the other stake, I think why I was excited in part of it is to generate more of our own resources. Clearly, that's something that we need to focus on. I think the attention, rightfully so, has been in that transition to Division I. Let's try to get good. Let's get good competitively. And I think that's where the effort was. That's where it should have been. And we've done that. So the challenge is to maintain or get even better. But after 9 championships, it's getting tough. We've tied the record, but we're going to work towards it. But, you know, creating more revenue to match resources to our expectations. So, you know, I say aggressive, but not in an in-your-face way. We're going to work really hard to engage the Capital Region. That was a big part of why I was interested in this job. We have 40,000 alums that are right here in our own backyard that we can do a much better job engaging, getting them to buy tickets and go from regular game tickets to season tickets to being a donor to being a corporate sponsor if they're in that capacity to try to fill up our stands and our stadiums. Football, as an example, we sold out, I think, last year, the initial opening of football, which you would hope to do. Our second sellout, which I would count as the first one that, you know, you start thinking about moving forward, was at homecoming this year. And it was a great partnership with our alumni association and our development association, where it was the first time I could see there were people grilling everywhere and coolers everywhere and kids throwing footballs around. It was a really fun, energetic day, and we need to build that sort of game day experience around the program. It's what we're going to work to do. Men's basketball, we led the league in attendance in America East. We sold out 2 games, the Purple Grail and the America East finals. And I'm sorry, Dr. Jones, the revenue from the finals goes to the America East. We did a good job for them, but that's how the bid is set up. But nonetheless, we were sold out. Women's basketball really saw the crowds getting bigger and bigger. And very interesting to me, the America East final again, they should be sending us some sort of bonuses or something. We're filling their coffers. Highest price ticket we had all year for a game was in women's basketball was the finals. It was the biggest crowd we had of the year. So it was a real eye-opener to me that we really need to take a look at how we sell, how we market, and what we're charging. If people don't perceive there's a value, they are not gonna purchase it. So that's something we're gonna look at over the summer. In men's lacrosse, we're 5th nationally in attendance, which is a very strong statement. So I think these things are starting to come. Our football season ticket sales are already ahead of where we were last year. So we set a soft goal, not a soft, we set a goal internally of at least selling out the gold circle area, which are the chair backs in football, which require a donation to do that. And perfect timing with Fardeen. One of the things that we don't have that we're working on now is most Division I programs have a brand new athletic fundraising or development group. We currently do not have that structure. So working with Fardeen and the UAlbany Foundation, he's agreed to let us set up an ad hoc committee with some current foundation board members and some combination of alums, donors, community business leaders to take a look at what we might call ourselves, how we're going to brand it, what's the logo going to look like, what are the benefits going to look like, all the things that we know how to bring to the table, but just to do it in a very organized manner where if you're a season ticket holder and a donor or a corporate sponsor, you will get added value by getting credit for those things when it comes to your seats or your parking for football, your tailgating, hospitality. And I think probably you might see it center around the Great Dane name somehow, because in my short time here, probably everyone around this table would identify yourselves if you went here, attended, or know us as by a different name based on the time you were here around, whether it's Sunya or Albany State or UAlbany or University at Albany, SUNY, whatever the case. But for 50 years, we've been the Great Danes. And this year, by the way, is Damien's 50th birthday, so we're going to plan some special things in the fall. So just to create that brand awareness of how you support athletics is something we're going to have our first meeting in June. So those are some of the things that we're working on, and some of the reasons why I'm really excited to be here. And I will try to cut my remarks at that. And if there's a question or two.
I'm just wondering, did you check? Because it seems like you were deep in the statistics in that three-hour run. Did you happen to check the statistics on the championships and the winning percentage and the seats, the bodies in the seats, once you name that Seth Hugh Arena?
Yeah, I can tell you the trim is going on. We only have a few seats left.
That's all right. We don't have enough time.
Yeah. That's a good partnership right there.
Yeah. I think you trumped the Seth Hugh Arena.
We were having a similar discussion earlier. Yeah.
Well, this is a question I've been meaning to ask you, because particularly when you mentioned the visibility that was received, particularly around Peter, mm-hmm. have we done a calculation of kind of the economic or financial impact of that in terms of the visibility to the university, and in terms of what that would have cost if we had to pay for it?
Yeah, we're working on a rough estimation. I've reached out to a board member, the former, it's my last job, is kind of a specialist in media, and he's trying to help us identify some people that can help us put a really good number to it, because I know it's a big number, but we'd really like to quantify it so people can just, oh yeah, you were on it, that's great, but what does it really mean? And that's just, you know, men's basketball. Within a smaller circle, lacrosse, which is a very tight-knit community, we're kind of the coolest thing happening in lacrosse across the country. So, yeah, that's something we're working
Saturday
on.
Saturday at 12 noon, we're going to be playing Notre Dame again.
That's right.
Rematch of last year's same game, final eight. Not the same spot, unfortunately. It's out in Denver, so it's going to be hard for everybody to get there. But I think everybody should know that it's going to be on ESPNU, and it's the first game of the last four games. So see how it goes.
Great opportunities. And along those lines, I love how this is setting up. You know, we got snubbed a little bit. We probably should have hosted the first round game, but that's okay. We got to go to Cornell.
Same thing happened last year. We beat
and got a chance to revenge with Cornell, and maybe a chance to get it, to get Notre Dame. And then potentially, I think, Denver in the offing. And Coach Moore is fantastic. He was asked after the Cornell game, hey, you know, you got some revenge against Cornell, now you're heading in and against Notre Dame with a little chip on your shoulder. How does that play into it? He says, no, we don't have a chip on our shoulder, because we want to play our game the way it's supposed to be played. And if you go into something with a chip on your shoulder, you tend to play out of character and we're going to do what we do well and do it our way, which I thought was a really impressive comment that he had on that.
Can I just add to that? One of the recurring comments that I've heard time and time again, not only for basketball, but lacrosse and our other sports, is how well our young people handle themselves in front of the camera, where a lot of us, including yours, truly probably couldn't do as well. I mean, I'm just absolutely amazed. Someone asked me, he said, you must require your students to take a course in, what did you call it?
Press.
Dealing with the press?
Yeah.
I said, no, they're just smart, that's all. And people have asked me that more than once, and so I just wanted to say that, because it really does come through, and particularly when Sam Raleigh was asked that very inappropriate question about, well, what about that basket and Peter's implication that, you know, his mother and Angels were all involved. Yeah. I mean, he handled that question extremely well. He did what I call the political thing.
He said, well, I'm not going to address that cap question, but let me tell you what I do want you to know. I mean, he, just on the fly, he knew better than try to even go there. He just said, let me tell you what I do want. I mean, something to that effect. I probably don't have
it. No, you got it right. That young man is, I'm kind of a halfway house for some of these guys. I try, because they don't have time to get any work experience, I try to give them some work experience. So I've had some exposure to some of these kids. Sam, in particular, is one of the brightest people that you are going to want to meet. We just helped him to arrange for an interview, an on-site interview with Goldman Sachs. He is going to do extremely well, but I think the recruiting of these guys has been outstanding. They are not just basketball players. Their academic ability and their ability to be impactful in the real world is going to be so much further than anything they have done on the court, at least the kids that I have been exposed to.
And what allows them in terms of the American Indian.
Right.
I mean, we are now a focal point of every single discussion in this country about how American Indians should be treated not only as students but also as athletes. And a year ago, and you know this, I was a big champion of trying to get that out there.
Yep.
And now that it is, it's talked about all the time.
Yep.
I mean, it's really an amazing amount of discussion now that centers around our place in terms of a hotbed for Indian rights and pushing the agenda for that in this country.
It, to your point, we've actually had a donor that stepped up with a six-figure endowment to support Native American students at UAlbany. You know, lacrosse would be the first line, but then if there's not one, so there's an initiative program around there. I think we have a real opportunity to build upon.
I was going to ask, when we, when students fill out applications to come here, do they put down why they are applying to UAlbany in the first place? I mean, because it seems to me, if we're starting to want to start tracking some of this stuff, not so much in terms of how much would it have cost us to get the advertising, but in terms of the impact, the general impact, one of the things that would be good to know in general is why students come here in the first place. Why did they apply? And so perhaps we should start tracking on our application somehow. How did you hear about Albany? What prompted you to apply? It's just, it also might guide us in terms of where we want to look. A thought. I mean, I get asked those questions all the time by, even your doctor's like, how did you hear about Albany?
That's a good point.
Just a thought.
Any other questions?
Mark, given, the success of some of our programs, do you think we have the right mix of conference affiliations?
You know, that question comes up a lot. Actually, right after my press conference, I stepped away. The very first question I got was literally, and with the American East Conference commissioner right next to me, Amy Hutchett. Now, are you going to move to the CAA? And I was like, call me off air for a second. I said, we're happy with where we are.
Big problem. We're in what's construed as a soft conference.
Right.
Yes. But I will tell you that it's not bad to be in a soft conference because then you get an AQ.
Mm-hmm.
And believe me, Hopkins learned this year that if they hadn't won the Big Ten, they would never have made the tournament in the first place because they would never have gotten that large bid. So you've got to be focused on, it'd be great to move to, the Big Ten or the Atlantic Coast, but then you got a lot of other teams to compete with, and if you're not good enough without the AQ, you may not get in.
And that's exactly right, because most of the leagues we might move into or would consider us, we're trading, we've had this discussion, we're trading the one bid situation for another one bid situation.
I was going to say, the CAA doesn't get.
They're a perfect example. And where we should be with football there, and that was a huge part of why I was excited about this, was where football was located at FCS football, in arguably the best top-to-bottom conference in the country. But I worked in that league for 10 years, and I can tell you that from a facility standpoint, from some other areas, we would be behind the curve big time. Some of our sports, lacrosse, would compete at a higher level than others.
We could compete in any of the
But to
conference.
Get to the AQ,
but
you've got
to get that AQ. You're giving up some potential there.
And here's what we have that other schools don't have. And I'm not picking on them, but James Madison University and Harrisonburg, Virginia, they'd love to be
an FBS school. When I was at Old Dominion, we made that move and that jump. A big part of why we were able to do it was the market we were located in. It was a great right. TV market, and all these moves were about football and TV revenue. One thing that we have that others don't is we're in a great media market. I think we're in the top 50. We have almost a million people in our MSA. We would be attractive to someone should we ever do that. Whereas if we were located somewhere else, Virginia Tech would never. If Virginia Tech was starting right now, they'd never be where they are now because they're in Blacksburg, Virginia.
To the HU, you're
training. You're not increasing your chances for postseason, and you're stepping up in terms of facilities and so other things.
All it does is help your RPI, which means that theoretically, if you didn't get the AQ, you may have a chance to get an at-large bid. But remember, there's only 16 teams.
It also gets really expensive, particularly on the football front. I mean, it's expensive. I mean, you have to guarantee
millions. Well, some of you might not be aware of this, but this issue came up in my first 9 months here. And that was actually an article or a news story that said that I was going to have a meeting in my office at 9 o'clock where I was going to be announcing that I was going to move all of the athletic to the CAA. If you noticed, that didn't happen.
Not yet.
Well, it will only happen at the point where it makes sense and is doable
that
and supportable.
Doesn't even seem logical to me at all. I mean, if you're going to make the jump.
Philosophically, I mean, you've got to move the needle. That doesn't do it, I don't think.
I agree. Yeah. Like I knew what I'm talking about.
Central time early.
But I know
something. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Okay. Thanks.
Can I make one announcement?
Sure.
One thing that I didn't mention that Michael and I and Steve did talk about is you asked about the MOUs and the timeline for the law school discussion. I want to be very, very clear that we plan to bring those MOUs back to this body to be vetted and approved before we move ahead. The way that we're working is will not require any approval from SUNY at this juncture. We have the ability to affiliate just with your approval and your blessing, and that's how we plan to go about doing this. So I forgot to mention that piece. So as we develop these MOUs, we'll be coming back, laying out the details, and having a discussion with you before we move ahead.
Hello everyone, my name is John.
That's a little bit around.
Sit back and relax. I have 6 hours worth of material here that I will breeze through in about 40 minutes. If you have questions, just interrupt me. So I'm John Jerusso, I'm the AVP for Facilities. I'm very pleased to present to you what we're doing here on campus with regard to facilities under the direction of President Jones and my boss, Jim Van Voorst. I'm representing a staff of about 20 architects and engineers and planners, and then a facilities office of about 400 craftsmen and shops persons and custodians and others who make this university, we believe, a more wonderful place to live and work in. So I'm going to go through here, please, again, interrupt me if you'd like to. Right now, if you take a snapshot of what we're doing in Res Hall and Academic, it's about $350 million. The biggest piece of what we're working on is what we'll talk about in a while is the E-Tech Homeland project is around $184 million. As you can see, it's the largest piece. The other one is the Campus Center renovation and expansion of $62 million. And this section here pretty much represents where we are on our critical maintenance backlog work, which is the balance of what we're doing. Our funding from the state for academic programs has suffered of late in the most recent years. We're on a trajectory into the next couple of years based on the governor's five-year plan for $10 million a year. That's the UAlbany piece of the pie that's appropriated, which is $200 million SUNY-wide. Ours is $10 million out of that piece based on a formula from Samoa.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. So this is our capital construction allocation.
This is
enterprise wide.
This is to appropriated to UAlbany and is appropriated to the construction fund of the state of New York. And this is our piece that's allocated based on our formula, based on enrollment in the aging facility.
And is that our only source of funding?
This is our virtually our only source of funding for academic programs. We can supplement this through governmental affairs, through legislative lobbying and member items, and that's what this was back then. But this, since then, has been pretty much flatlined.
But it doesn't pay to follow Michael's question. So if you look at all those areas that it was around 30 million,
right?
Was the original allocation more around 10, and then we got member items and other things that brought us to 30, or do we do a drop of $20 million? I think that's sort of
I'm trying to relate it to the earlier
part of my
chart.
Question is that, you know, so when I think about the value, the current value of our planned equipment, the number has to be
it's got to be a B, right?
There's a B,
right?
So whenever you have a planned equipment that large, your normal need for refreshment is.
You're right on point. That's what this red line is. This is 2% of our replacement value.
Which even that is very on the conservative side.
Yeah, agreed.
I mean, I spend $10 million a year, and I have I'm nothing. Okay, go ahead. You answered my question.
So on academic, it doesn't look great. I mean, we had some great years. This is the business building and the campus center. We're here. And so we're going to be rationing what we're doing, but nonetheless, we have some exciting plans. On the residential side of the house, what we can do in the residence halls is based on our ability to afford the debt. There are no grants like there are for academic work. It's all based on what student fees can support in debt issuance.
Can you go back to the earlier chart you showed us? So the residential piece of that, okay, so of the 300, first of all, the $350 million, is that what we still have to spend going forward?
This or is a snapshot of jobs that are in planning through jobs that are just finished beneficial occupancy. So there are multiple years of funding stacked. You know how capital spans any given year? So you've got money that was appropriated in 2008 in some cases that are still part of this that hasn't been spent yet.
Okay, I'm just trying to get a sense of if, assuming we're getting $10 million a year,
right?
How much we have to be spending normal maintenance, kind of refreshment-wise, plus all the extra projects on top of that, you know, what that tab is, so that I can relate it to how much we're actually receiving. That's where I was trying to...
Yeah, this line here, which is about, we need at least $30 million a year so that we don't keep slipping backwards.
Okay.
Deferred maintenance backlog.
And the 350 is over and above that?
No, 350 is what we're doing based on what was in the hopper from prior years. Uh-huh. Now capital takes many years to spend out in many cases.
So these projects are funded, in effect?
Funded in some phase, whether we're planning or just about to close out. So again, let me keep going.
So it's essentially most of those numbers combined.
Yeah,
right.
So something to go down.
That's what I was trying to get to.
Right.
Okay.
This, I have a couple slides here, which is showing you what you already know, that the podium, you know, is reaching 50 plus years old, and it's a constant struggle and challenge to adapt it and maintain it. When it was built, clear cut, can't do that in this day and age. The DEC only allows you 5 acres at a time of undisturbed way. Not 400. Cool photo. Here's a scaled drawing of our uptown versus downtown, showing the relative sizes of both campuses and the relative ages. Red is older, and green is newer. You'll see that even though we're spending most of what we have uptown, largely because of the square footage, it's also because uptown has systems that are prone to failure after 50 years. We're downtown, it was just basic, no air movement, no central air conditioning, nothing like that, so we don't have as many breakdowns, which is simpler, older technology, sure.
Where are we with the Olney High School?
Skylar is in planning for renovation.
Yeah.
So is that the reason for the red, so much of the red? Or?
It's a reason for a good chunk of the rent, but used it open up in 1919. Most of the other buildings are there just as old. But I'm going to talk about Schuyler in a little while, okay. But it's in planning.
Maybe keep going.
Sure.
If you go back to this, the slide where you showed the big pie there. But is Schuyler funded or Schuyler's in planning without funding?
Schuyler's in planning, funded for planning.
Not funding to do the redevelopment?
No, not yet. That's a big effort on governmental affairs and all of us. And working with Jim and Dr. Jones, we'll get there. The smaller pieces, probably. This is a slide which shows you the age of the Uptown facilities. Red means old and not renovated. I mean, we've done onesie, twosie rooms, as you know, but we have never got renovated. For every building has not been, with the exception of the art and sciences building. You'll see on the periphery of the Uptown campus, we've been very good at getting and renovating those buildings and actually building a lot of new. But the tough nut to crack right here is 21 acres of the podium, 1.8 million square feet. The big issue is we don't have anywhere to put everybody so that we can gut renovate the building. And we're working on that. That's what the whole large reason was for the business building. But still, this is a tough nut to crack. Another issue, as you all know, is that we have a functioning university that's very densely constructed. So if you swing a hammer on this end of the campus, you hear it on the other end. And it's very disruptive to all of our functions here. There's no backyard, no back door. So when we stage these, and this is a map of one of our staging challenge insurance that we do in our facilities office, we have to make sure that we can get people to the podium. Bag. Again, without having an ugly, unsightly place, it's a challenge for us. So I'm just going to go through a whole bunch of work that we're doing right now. Again, interrupt me if you like. First job that we're going to talk about is the Campus Center expansion and renovation. This is a $62 million project. What happens with this job is that we right-size our Campus Center or Student Union from one that was built in the 60s for then enrollment of around 10,000 to our current enrollment of 17,000. Students. So it has three phases. The first phase is underway right now. It's 21,000 square feet of new building, the East Addition. 2A, site work is underway right now, another addition, 55,000 square feet. And then from the edge of this building on the ground floor all the way through, we're going to renovate the entire ground floor of the campus center so that you have a seamless new space for dining, for kitchen facilities, and for student-based functions. Here it is if you look at the plant at grade level, and I'll just show you this is the new on the west, and this will be renovated in the middle. If you zoom in on the east dining facility, what it is basically is just a kitchen and dining. It's a double story space with a kitchen functions on underneath in the underground area. There'll be five serveries in here and space for student seating. This is very important to get done, and it's scheduled to get done this summer. So that when this is finished, we can then take offline the balance of the campus center for information. We need a place to feed our faculty students, and especially students, while this is down. So this is on schedule to get done this summer. If you go to the other side, you'll see that we have a student activity space. We have a 400-seat auditorium planned in here. We have student association offices that will be moving from elsewhere in the campus center so that we can get to those spaces to renovate. We have a whole bunch of dining, seating areas, and lounge and other casual spaces. There'll be 17 new eateries when it's all said and done, with a net increase of 5 from current number. There's going to be, right now, we don't know if we're going to pull the trigger on this yet, it's still under discussion, but there'll be a fitness center, at least in plan, in this space, student offices, multi-use rooms. If you go up one level to the podium deck area, there's just a group here, because that's one. But if you zoom in on this side, you see more student areas, more fitness potential areas. Sure.
The multi-purpose auditorium, is it also going to be able to utilize as a place where we might show second-time movies?
It'll be outfit with AV. All of that, it'll have a stage area for student performances. And on top of that, there'll be tablet armchairs so that they can be used as a lecture instructional function.
On the fitness, has there been any thought about bringing in some third-party company like a Crunch or a
Excel or something like that that would then be, you know, treated almost like an outsourcing kind of thing.
Like having Barnes and Noble for the bookstore.
Well, I'm just saying. Yeah.
That wouldn't be my area. I mean, we have a recreation group that is.
Well, you would get a franchise fee or something like that.
Let me just say briefly.
Sounds like our next
I'm very concerned, as I said at the faculty meeting at the early part of this week, that we, the only university that I'm familiar with has used the Peach Mills approach to address student health and rec sports, recreational facilities. We're the only place that I can think of in the capital region that doesn't have a dedicated recreational facility that's built for the purpose. We have a tendency, every time we build a dorm, you find all these workout rooms scattered all across the campus, but we don't have a centrally located facility that's designed for health and wellness, not only for students, but for faculty as well.
And I think it wows students when they are doing a campus tour, too.
I think so, too.
Well, I said to this group, because I had the fortune of supervising a guy who did research for his PhD thesis that showed that the number one factor that a majority of students use to decide where they're going to enroll is whether or not you have a new or upgraded recreational facility. Not whether or not your football team went to the Rose Bowl or the Final Four. They want to know how many, do you have a climbing wall? You know, that's what these are, in a track. That's what these kids are looking for these days. And I got a little bit of pushback about this from some faculty members, but.
But the thought I had was, you wouldn't have to spend the money for all the restaurants.
Well, absolutely.
That would be put in for you, and that, yes, there would be a fee, and it would be a discounted fee, I would assume. And it would just, you know.
John, I'm not aware of.
There's a lot of places are doing that.
Well, right.
Hotels are doing it.
And some universities have actually done this in collaboration with the community, and small communities where they're not rec sport facilities. The Morris campus at Minnesota that I oversaw, we built one there in partnership with the committee. Yep, and so people had access, and so it was. We do have to think about a different problem for this university, because what we're doing now just makes no sense at all. And that small space, from my perspective, is not going to make a difference in the recreational needs of most of our students. That's my biggest concern. Anyway,
you said you have 17,000 kids. Where are they going to go? Unless Mark opens up the gym.
We have.
Well, we need to have a bigger focus about health and wellness across the board for faculty, staff, and students.
You want to get a building.
Yes.
I have more than that in my building over there.
I'm sure you do.
250 people, but I have more than that space in 50%
total. No, that's what I mean. It's just, you know.
So what's the length of process for this whole project? How long?
This project will be completed in 2017. If you go to the basement level, what you'll see on this side, if they let you in, is a prep kitchen and a mechanical space. It'll be the central catering function for the campus as well. And on this side will be the back of the house operations for this auditorium and stage and some storage areas. So this is what it'll look like on the east side. And if you took the roof off, this is what it looks like inside. Again, it's a two-story space, very open dining. With the servery in the corner, again the rendering, another rendering, and if you go into the building, as of yesterday, here's where we are vis-a-vis construction. They're starting to put up the sheetrock, as you can see, and the mechanicals are being placed in there. And if you just look at some funky pictures of the site work, you'll note that we have that long tunnel underground, because that's where the loading dock is going to be for the kitchen facilities, right here by the science library loading dock. If you recall, the prior loading area for the campus center dining and kitchen areas was right out there in the public at the bus stop. So you had a conflict with buses and pedestrians and people unloading, no crates, it wasn't a good spot. So we've got this tunnel right now, which is terrific to have. And this is the current state of affairs in that tunnel. There'll be some office and storage areas off the sides. Here it is as it's developed. Again, it's not too complicated. It's a 20,000 square foot box, pretty much. And it's coming up, and it'll look like a UAlbany building. There it is, and it's rendering.
Now, if you look at the other side, on the west addition, when you're back to the athletic facilities, the main entry to the camp, to the new campus center will be at a new bus stop through these doors here. You can go straight into the campus center, and I'll show you some plans in a second. Or if you're by Dutch Quad, you want to go from the ground level up to the podium deck, there will be a stairway here. There's the shape of the auditorium, and you'll be able to see and glass into the student areas. If you're by the volleyball court by Dutch Commons, again, you'll see the auditorium here. There'll be another side entrance. This will be the multi-use room. And if you're going down by the stairs, by education, by campus center, this is your view right here. Here's Stuyvesant Tower on Dutch Quad. The auditorium, as I've mentioned, is 400 seats. It's designed so that it can be flipped to do instructional as well as movies or other kind of functions as well. Of note is the way you're going to get around the campus center. I heard a lot of you were alums, so this might be jarring when I told you about it. Right out here in this, in the area out here, the garden area, we're going to demolish the, with the exception of this fountain, which will stay, the current planters will be downsized. The scale of those planters is too big in their current form. We're going to provide more gathering and seating areas in here and function space. But most importantly, the way to get from the podium deck level to the ground level will be through this outside enclosure. So if you're used to in the campus center of going down these stairs and getting down to the area there, this is the stairs I'm talking about. They will be demolished between now and October. They will be gone. And in their place, there'll be a flyover walkway. And in so doing, when these stairs are gone, as I mentioned, and this is what it will look like when you come down to that box. In so doing, what you'll have is an unimpeded view from one side on the east addition all the way to the west side. You'll come down these stairs, and in front of you will be all your serveries. You won't have a conflict between queuing and people trying to get in and out of your food. So we're pretty excited about that. So if you took the roof off the west addition, again, you'll have this corridor. This is where that rec center was. There's student offices here. You're going to have an ability here, just like you do in the campus center up in the main entry, to put signs and flags and have tables and things like that, which students currently do. You'll have that through here as well. You'll have high-end finishes. It'll be a terrific place for recruitment. You'll bring students and prospective students and families through here. You'll see a lively campus center, all new. Tons of things, retail, dining options, again, all these other great new opportunities. Again, here it is in its planned form. So this is scheduled open in 2017. Here, that's when I took the roof off. This is what you're looking at here. Here it is in the site work. We're putting in the forms and the foundations right now. This was from yesterday. This will be up in 2017. And what it's causing, unfortunately, like I said, a lot of disruption for our students, faculty, and staff. So right now, I'm not going to bore you with all the staging and other things. We have this on our website, but we've got to get people in and around this construction, which we'll do with signage and advance notice. We will have some in green will be open during construction through the whole construction job. So we knew this was coming, and our dining partner UAS and Sodexo had put together a plan so that there are alternate dining facilities during the construction. The first stage was to reconfigure the 518 market so that it could remain open through the entirety of the construction of the campus center. We opened in the lecture center areas. Hopefully you've been down there. This new Argo Tea facility, which has small sandwiches, coffee, and tea. And the ground floor of the business building, there's a little cafe down there as well, which will have expanded hours during the construction of the campus center. There's one food truck on campus. We may get another one. And on top of that, the patroon room, which is on the second floor of the campus center, will probably be flipped to a grab-and-go dining option so that we can ensure more folks through there. So we're doing some modifications this summer to make that happen. Here it is in its final form. We're excited, and it'll get done in 2017. Quickly, I'll go through a lot more. We've been working on every one of these towers. So in 2013, we gut renovated Mohawk, and then we went to Stuyvesant, and then we went over to Livingston, and this summer we're working on
I say Stuyvesant, I meant, Stuyvesant is what we're working on this summer. What are we doing in the towers? There's 2,200 windows or so in each tower. They're all replaced. And on top of that, this is not good. As you can see, we have concrete and the exposed rebar, rust, and all sorts of bad other things. And in any heavy wind-driven rain, we have tons of complaints about damage and rain penetration. So about $7.5 million for each of these tower facade jobs. On top of that, we're kicking off an elevator replacement for each of these towers. There are three elevators in every tower. We're working on that. That'll probably take us a good 5 years to finish. Okay, you're going to take one down a year, obviously. These are the stair climbers going up on Stuyvesant. Flood remediation. This is a photo from last summer. See this giant supercell? This is the city of Albany from East Greenwood. So in two successive years, we've gotten nailed with what looks like the new normal with heavy rains. So this is the base, this is the lecture center stairs, this is water, this is the doors leaning down. That's not good, as you all know. And in the tunnels, we had problems as well, you know, low spots. Here's our storm system backing up. Here's that water there. When that happens, we all know everyone at facilities like, oh crap. So we're all, oh God. So what happened was, and some of you have heard me say this before, is that the RH pipe, a network of storm pipes, just couldn't handle the head pressures coming off the roof and with the backup, and so they split in half. And what happened in the tunnels is that it just washed out. I showed you that photo before, all the sand and everything below there. And so we jackhammered through, and there was nothing there. The jackhammer went all the way down. That's not good. So we replaced all these pipes, and we did a good job, we think, with handling that portion. And then we cammered all the lines and slip lines what we could get access to. And on top of that, 2014, or last year, we did some upgrades as well to storm pipe. But in this upcoming 2016 year, we're going to upsize this 18-inch line to a 30-inch line just east of Colonial Water. Hopefully we'll address that.
Again, John, most of the drainage
You told me once, but I forgot.
No, it's okay. You basically snap a line in the middle of the campus, so everything on the north side of the campus goes to the detention basin over by the Colonial Quad, and everything on the south goes to Indian Pond. And then we have a whole bunch of under parking lot drainage storage facilities. New DEC regs don't allow a drop of water. Every new construction job has to retain or purge water into the ground. This is a biggie, the E-Tech and Homeland College construction. President Jones had referred to it in his remarks, but what we had done, we were in planning for the 225,000 square foot E-Tech project as part of our 2020 plan. And then we were fortunate enough in the state of the state to get recognition for our work and our capabilities in emergency preparedness and Homeland Security. So what we had was a synergy between these two programs and the ability to move this project from where it was. Here's our campus, here's the Harriman campus, here's the property line in its current form. So we had planned to build it here by the Life Sciences Building over by Indian Quad. But right now we're in discussions with OGS and the governor's office and others to put the building right here. And that's what we're proceeding to do with regard to planning. We're on track. We've got everything lined up. Hopefully we'll get this constructed by 2019. But where exactly it goes on the Harriman campus is really based on how this bus rapid transit concept goes through, and if you're not familiar with it, I'll show you some slides. CDTA is our transportation partner. We contract with them to supplement our own bus system. And what they have done on the Central Avenue line is a BRT. As you know, it's a double-length bus. All the lights are switched so that the bus can go. It's light rail, but on wheels, basically. So over the last 10 years or so, we've been working, us and St. Rose and the City of Albany, on developing this purple line, which would follow up Western Avenue, go through the Harriman campus, and come through our campus as well. It promises to shave off at least 7 to 10 minutes between the downtown campus right here and our campus, so that, again, that we can integrate campuses more closely. It's a good regional transportation, and it helps advance our sustainability goals as well. So here, if you zoom in, again, it goes through the Harriman campus, it cuts through and comes onto our campus.
So where this actually will cut through over here, and I'll show you a slide in a second, really will dictate the best place to put this ETEC in the home life building. Here's the CDTA's concept plans. Again, here's our campus, here's the podium, here's the Indian quad, here's where it potentially would go. This CDTA bus rapid transit project is a $65 million soup to nuts job, and it's a concept estimate. It's been funded by the federal government through complete design. They're currently moving to complete design. They were in concept, they're gonna go to construction documents. The construction portion of the job is gonna be based on federal funding. It's 80% federal funding with a 20% match, which could be a combination of state funds, CDTA, and other partner funds. And that all funding hasn't been decided yet, frankly, that's still in play, but nonetheless, it's all in planning and there's support behind it. So where we go on our campus, if again, if you recognize this portion of campus, this is the athletic field right here, science library here, here's the road it would go on. It's not the pristine road that no one ever goes on, actually, it's pretty heavily used in its current form. We get deliveries. This is where the daycare is currently. That daycare actually is being moved under a separate initiative, so that won't be an issue. But part of this whole plan is to put sidewalks and lighting and dress it all up so that when buses do come in, we'll have a great area that we won't have these current and we'll address these issues of pedestrian vehicle conflict. So if you zero in again, I told you about where you put ETEC really is based on how bus rapid transit plays out, and we're working with them on it. So here is the Harriman campus, here's our campus, and here's the Boar Sculpture Studio. Here's the property line again if you zero in on it. Here's if you put in concept where the bus rapid transit would go through Harriman. This would be a dedicated bus lane right through here. Buses only, again, into our campus. But part of, in order to make this happen on the Harriman campus, the CDTA project has to combine some of those vexing ring roads over on Harriman, something that OGS and the state has been trying to do for years and decades. So that is currently in their plan, is to combine these ring roads around Harriman into one and to locate a roundabout, which is an opportune time for a connection from our ring road to the Harriman campus ring road, which is part of what we've committed to as a university of OGS. So this is the 12 acres that President Jones was talking about right here, give or take, it's scaled. This generally probably is where the building will go. And here, if you look at another, what we did is we just plopped over and to scale the old ETEC design concept and put in the proper parking and put some site amenities. It's starting to develop out. Now there's a lot of other parcels that we sort of have our eyes on, but we can't get too greedy. We have to, you know, get the first 12 acres first. So I'm always showing you this because it's full disclosure here, but there are other parcels which make sense. Should this all get built, they would be, you know, throwaways. We're working on all the site planning now. We're not there. We can't tell you exactly where a building will go, but this is what's in play now, and that's what we're doing.
This may be a stupid non-engineering type question, but why wouldn't we build underground parking so we have room for a second building if we need it for something else?
They're on point with the cost piece, but we, as part of this, are planning. This right now is ETEC, and its old design was three stories. Five is a good number for efficiency in terms of cost for construction. So we'll most likely go up because we do want to preserve on this site a minimum of 80,000 square foot expansion, at least one building. But we have to slow play that a little bit because we don't want to look like we've taken over here.
It just doesn't make sense to me to keep building parking lots.
Surface lot, you know, a spot on a surface between 5,000, 6,000.
I understand, but next time we're like, oh, where are we going to locate that, our next health center or whatever, we're going to be going, have to look for another location?
It's a valid point. And when you talk about the long-term master plan for this campus cannot be sustained with the number of surface parking lots that we have now.
Yeah.
We're not, you know, look how long it's taking to get these.
I mean, we're
going to
be parking people over in, you know, I don't know, Gilderland or whatever the next town is.
Yeah. Here, when we did an earlier visioning of what we thought this would be, this is where we were. You know, the straight run of the campus, this architecture would look and feel like a UAlbany construction. And here's the State Police building, the CMO building.
Right.
again, this is not a design, this is what we had in concept.
So it doesn't feel as remote as...
We want to make it feel as though you're just two steps over and, hey, I'm still here on this campus. It's going to be a challenge, you know, if that's our objective. So I mentioned the podium. We have 21 acres of the podium. We have a roof deck that continues to fill. These colored areas are areas that we've successfully gotten to. As you can see, it's quite a job. We've got leaks all over the campus based on the podium deck. We replaced them. Our folks are pretty darn good at replacing them when it's done. If you don't work on this podium deck, this is what we have, these expansion joints. Like crazy, and I don't know if you can see it from the back, but you've got exposed rebar and deterioration, which isn't good, obviously, for our structure. This right here is one of many under podium deck roof drainage systems we have. We have gutter systems that, you know, anticipate these kind of things. As part of this podium deck work is that we're restoring these podium planters, and if you've been here lately, you've seen that as well. We've been trying to get to these planters because they leak as well. They're integrated into the structure of the campus, and there's electrical conduit and plumbing as well that leak out. We think we've done a pretty darn good job in getting to it. Here's some photos of us getting to these planters, waterproofing them. This was just this week when we finished off prior to commencement that one section. We did take some trees down, and unfortunately we had to. These trees were way over above the roof line, as you can tell. It causes all sorts of issues with our roofing system. We'll get and replace those as well. But we think we're turning the corner. We are turning the corner. If you're all along, and if you've seen, you know, some bad articles about this campus, are we ugly? We were rated one of the 10 ugliest. This goes back to 2011. This was from 2012 also. This is from 2013. We're constantly berated for the architecture here, and so we've been doing, I think, a pretty darn good job turning the corner, softening up this place. So if you go and you check out social media, you'll see people are posting not ugly comments. This is just a representative bank example. We got rated number 4th most beautiful business building, and it's true. If you, again, social media wise, you just scan for keywords, you don't see ugly anymore about you, Albany, and this is what prospective students do. So I think we're turning the corner on that. Let's get to some really quickly. Energy master plan, we're working on increasing our efficiency. We're already down almost, this is an older number, we're closer to double digits on savings. We got LEED Gold on all of our buildings, including the data center, which is an accomplishment. Right now we have Executive Order 88. All state agencies have to get a 20% cut in their utility by 2020. We're trying to get there. That's going to take some investment. We're making improvements to the Washington Avenue entry this summer. That's over here in this corner. This is its current state. Without boring you, what we're putting in here is turn lanes. Right now it's rated as a D, which is failure rate at peak times. So this summer this will be offline, and then come spring, or fall rather, we'll have it open up again. We're upgrading classrooms. This summer is Humanities B39 and 40, that's the old theater classroom. That's going to be converted from what was that into these lecture capture. Yeah. So what we'll have in here is a control room. There'll be glass in here. We'll have the ability to capture these lectures, have multiple cameras, and broadcast them on the web. So this has, the setup is still pending, but we anticipate it to be seminar style with a square table. That's by this fall. Downtown, the new 32C computer classroom is going to be in the basement Draper. And then we have a classroom committee that basically rates the worst of the worst, and we try to get at those. And we really don't have any really poor classrooms at this point, since addressed a lot of these here. Again, it's all about new furniture, modular furniture that we can move around for breakup rooms. These old labs are a thing of the past, thank God. These are all the new labs. Next year, we're working on computer engineering lab upgrades, and that'll be in the basement of earth science, and then we have some technology that we're deploying. Lecture center, 18 picture. This is a 90-inch monitor that we added. We upgraded the AV so that if you're sitting back here, you don't have to strain this in the front again. Building 25, you all knew it as the health center. If you have a better name for it, we'll take it, because frankly, we don't know what to call it just yet. But Building 25, we did it. It's basically a small version of a podium building. It's pretty cool. It's got all the great features of this architecture. It's going to be renovated, gut renovated, in and out, including the site work as well. It'll be the new home, somewhat temporarily, for economics department, Africana studies department. They'll move off the podium so we can make way for renovations. There'll be very flexible space, offices, and classrooms and departmental functions. On top of that, we're going to upgrade all the site features so that you can get from the podium to that building with no problems at all. Campus Center Dome needs to be repaired. That'll happen starting in early June. If you're walking around there this winter and it's snowing on you, it shouldn't. It's because some of those panels were out and they were broken. That's not good. So we're repairing those. See, that's bad. Podium door replacement. See, you know our doors, right? They're nice and heavy. They're a great workout opportunity. That's what they do. All the door closer mechanisms are right here. Not up there, but down here. So over the years, they deteriorated, solved, whatever. They just destroyed. So we're replacing all the doors with these more modern doors where the mechanisms are above. They're all ADA compliant. They have all the proper hardware. That'll happen starting this February. Downtown work is basically about facade repair. If you look up at Draper, you'll see in all the downtown buildings, you'll see this netting. We did Houston in 2013-14. We took out the cornice and some of the precast, and we replaced it, and it looks super, and we'll do that for virtually all the buildings downtown, even including a piece of the Schuyler building. In fact, this is where we'll be staging the job. We're doing the Schuyler roof, or the former high school roof this summer, as well as beginning to do this cornice work downtown. And on top of that, we're going to plant and beautify this corner over here, because if you drive down Lake Street by Schuyler, it's still somewhat of a legacy eyesore when we bought the place. We're going to dress it up a little bit. So you had mentioned the Schuyler building, where we are downtown. Clearly, it was a legacy acquisition for the university, 127,000 square feet. Look how darn close it is to Milne. It looked and does belong as part of the downtown campus. Got all these great features. This auditorium, you know, it'll be the biggest auditorium in our portfolio once it's renovated and ready for play. It's got architectural features that you can't afford to build. I mean, this is constructed in 1912. We don't build like that anymore. Big, airy, high ceiling, well-lit classrooms. You know, everyone's salivating to use these facilities. Again, detail, terrazzo, herringbone ceilings. Just beautiful. But there's a lot of bad, you know, we have leaks, we got all sorts of, we have two staircases in there. There's no elevator, there's no fire system, there's no central heating system that's fully deployed. We couldn't get her code. There's no way to move in tomorrow, even if we wanted to. Some ugly spaces, but nonetheless, we are in planning. The planning effort's about a $5 million planning effort. We're kicking it off right this summer. Thereafter, what we don't, the whole job, if you did it under one construction contract, got renovated, it's looking north of $50 million. We know that to get all $50 million through someone writing a check is going to be a challenge, so what we're going to do is slice and dice the building in sort of smaller chunks. Got this section, abate this section, be opportunistic. So it's all about downtown being linked with uptown. I know I'm not going to attack all both of these. But Schuyler is important for us because if you look at the uptown podium, and we've divided it into three zones for potential construction, we need Schuyler so we can move some folks off the west end of the podium and make room for renovations. We need Schuyler because we need that auditorium done that I showed you so we can take one off the PAC and renovate some of the PAC. And we also need Schuyler building downtown because it's envisioned as the new home for this engineering program. Don't have the real estate uptown. And so we've already kicked off a generic environmental impact statement downtown that has four major components: renovating Schuyler, exploring a parking deck at Thurlow, renovating Page Hall, and potentially expanding the Hawley Library. And Hawley, why would you expand Hawley? Well, if you bring out more livelihood. And students downtown, you're going to need more library space and student support space. And if you've been in that library, you see it's magnificent. So if you were expanded, this space, which is terrific in its own right, could be actually flipped and used for more public engagement and event kind of space. Again, we kicked off the GIS. We have a ton of other work, fire alarm, security, res halls. We're doing two res halls this summer, lighting upgrades. We're upgrading the lighting in the SEPQ arena. You're welcome. And in the library as well. And then we've got all these projects that are in the planning stages. So yes, we only have $10 million in the out years, but basically we've been told and directed, you know, get your plans and your starts going and just hope that the funds exist through governmental affairs or approach.
Doing the Skyler Bill, I just call it a whole night bill. Will that allow any courses that alone might be taught here to be taught down there for convenience purposes and that kind of thing? That's not big enough to do that?
Oh, it's more than big enough.
Okay, so that's what I'm thinking, Terps, yeah. Because see, one of the problems I see here is because this campus is way out here, and that Brevador is like the DMZ, so it comes off from the city. And I thought if you get people coming in starting at downtown, then that would be ease of connection, in other words, that you could pop in from the street right into the building, do what you have to do, and go home, as opposed to coming here, parking way over here, and walking way over here, and then getting way back there. It takes a considerable amount of time to do that. So that's one of the questions. The second question is that, in the overall scheme of things, the original amount of money you showed, did that include the renovations, the furniture, the upkeep, and all that, or is that a separate budget?
You mean the operations of a building once it's constructed?
The construction that you have money for there, that money's for construction, but does it also include the, as you said, the operation of the building, the maintenance of the building, and all that?
No.
So it'll be a separate budget.
No, that's a separate liability, right, that, you know, we're gladly take on when we, right, get the opportunity to do construction, but it's a challenge to find the money.
Because that's, to me, in a way, the key, because it's like here, when this thing was first built, is that when it starts to fall apart, and if you don't maintain it all the time, it's going to cost you even more.
Yeah. So to your first question, this notion of a bus rapid transit back and forth, yeah, that's the key portion of getting uptown and downtown to be almost seamless. So, yeah, you know, any notion of being the purgatory downtown should hopefully go away. And plus, when you have a facility, when Skyler opens up, or Little Albany High School, it's going to be spectacular.
Yeah.
You know,
well, I think one of the people who haven't been in to see it, a building, if it is a spectacular building, it's worth it. They have to, you know, go down and take a good look at it. It's very impressive. Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty much it.
All right.
Thank you.
Yeah, great job. Thank you.
Michael, one editorial comment, if you allow me. As a recovering vice president for finance and business,
yeah,
John and his modest crew do an amazing job. They can stretch a buck like nobody I know. He keeps more balls in the air than any human being possible. I don't know how he does it, mostly by not sleeping. So I just have to say, as his ex-colleague, hands off. Hats off. Hats off to John and his crew.
Okay. As you can see, we lost our leader. We're winding down. Our last order of business is a council resolution recognizing Tim Murphy. I'm going to read this and ask for a motion that our council resolve to recognize Tim Murphy's service during a challenging time and express our gratitude for his seasoned contribution to the work of the council, and further resolve that our council extend its good wishes to him as he assumes his duties as the immediate past president of the UAlbany Alumni Association. Will someone make that motion?
Second.
All in favor?
Got it.
Everybody,
Michael, I'll accept on his behalf. He's pawned everything else off on me, so.
Okay.
Will you be seeing him?
I hope so. I'm going to see Lee.
Is there any other, there is no old business. Is there any new business? If there's none, how many of us will be at commencement over the next 2 days? All right. That's going to be fun. It looks like we've got good weather. So what?
The reason I'm asking is maybe that to give to
bring your Purell and get ready to clap for 2.5 hours tomorrow. Okay, if there is nothing else, the motion to adjourn.
So we'll move.
All right. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
See you tomorrow.
Enjoy. Yep. Well, you know, and actually, Jeff Black wrote to me.
All right, brother.
See you later, John.
How they do the fundraising and stuff. Because I'm just